This is Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. Hello and welcome to episode 79 of Tea Earl Grey Hot, an unofficial Star Trek fan podcast from the Other Side Podcast Network. My name is Yannick, I'm the French guy from Switzerland, and joining me tonight is someone who will not follow you around the four quadrants, getting in your way and generally being a complete nuisance. Well, mostly due to the current travel restrictions anyway. It's my good friend Dave. Good evening, Dave. How are you?
Good evening, Yannick. Very well indeed. And I have to say that getting in people's way and generally being a complete nuisance is what I do best.
Yes. Yes, I do know that.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
Appreciate that. How are you?
Oh, I'm fine. I'm fine. Thanks. Everything is right around here, except the weather. I mean, when did we went back to winter? Very low temperature, and snow, rain, stuff like that. So, you know.
Well, we're still getting negative figures over here overnight, but during the day, it's really quite nice. I've got the CCTV camera pointing out the front of the house at the moment, and it's a gorgeous kind of blue sky, and it's just perfect. It's called heading towards nighttime.
Cool.
It's quite nice outside.
Cool. Very good. Well, so...
In fact, we were only saying the other day how we were missing the weather reports from the binary time.
Yes.
So we're just kind of carrying it on. So.
Yes, yes. Hint, hint, Mark. Just saying.
Oh, he's in the chat.
Yes,
I didn't notice.
Oh, Eric is there too. Hello, Eric. Well, while we are at it, hello, Lainey. Hello, Monica. Thank you for joining the YouTube chat.
Loads of people.
Yes. So in this episode, we're going to review Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 7, Q-less. And I'm sure we will have lots of trivia and stuff to say about this episode. So, Dave, if you are ready.
I was born ready.
Great. We shall then begin our review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 7, Q-less.
Punch it.
So, in the teaser, we are in the replimat on Deep Space Nine, where Dr. Julian Bashir recalls when he fought the toughest battle of his life to an attractive Bajoran woman, while Chief Miles O'Brien sits in the background, listening and occasionally rolling his eyes. And, I mean, that was subject to roll his eyes. The way Bashir was.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Riker of Deep Space Nine, you said, I think, once.
Yeah, my opinion has changed. Riker was comparatively well-behaved by comparison to Bashir.
Yes, indeed. Indeed. Bashir remembers that during his Starfleet medical exam, he was the last person in the room and there was no one else he could turn to for help. He says that he considered quitting the exam as he could feel the seconds ticking away. Then, he says, he closed his eyes, took a deep breath, and he remembered the answer. A pericardial membrane. He entered the answer in just before it was too late. He tells the woman that it is the stuff that Salutatorian are made of. The Bajoran woman wonders why he only made Salutatorian. In response, Bashir tells her that during the exam, he mistook a pre-ganglionic fiber for a post-ganglionic nerve. Easy mistake to make.
It's a common mistake.
Yeah, exactly.
I've made that mistake. Precisely. Yeah, precisely.
Yeah. If not for that trick question, Bashir tells her, he would have been valedictorian. Bashir begins to tell her more, but then Commander Benjamin Sisko calls both Bashir and O'Brien to landing pad 5.
Just in the nick of time.
Just on time. Just on time.
That entire scene was cringeworthy. It was so unbelievable. I couldn't bring myself to actually acknowledge the fact that that conversation was actually happening.
Yeah, and she was looking, you know, strangely at him, like as if she was either not paying attention or hypnotized. I don't know, but yeah, that didn't look very natural.
No.
Yeah, Monica says first season Bashir is awful. Yes, yes, indeed. Fortunately, it gets better with the seasons.
A Bashir drinking game. That sounds like fun.
Yeah. Sounds like Monica knows what she's talking about.
Yeah. Sounds like she's well ahead of us as well.
Well, we're talking about someone who actually made some Romulan ale, so.
Ah, yes, of course.
Yes. At the docking hatch, Sisko and Major Kiran Eris are desperately trying to open the door to the runabout USS Ganges. The Ganges has lost all power and oxygen levels have dropped dangerously low since the ship emerged from the Bajoran wormhole. Inside the Ganges are Lieutenant Jadzia Dax and Unseen Pole. Bashir scans with his medical tracker and asks Sisko how many people are supposed to be inside the runabout. Sisko tells him that there are supposed to be two, but Bashir replies that he is reading three. Kira suggests firing her Bajoran phaser at the door, but the door hatch is made of uranium composite. It will take her an hour to burn through. O'Brien then tells Kira to hand him an EPI capacitor, which will re-energize the servos and thus open the door hatch. Now, why has neither Sisko nor Kira thought about that? You know, instead of losing time trying to open the door, it must be some kind of emergency procedure that they're supposed to know.
No, the emergency procedure would be trying to blast the door down with a phaser. The standard procedure would be plug in an EPI capacitor.
Yeah, essentially a battery.
Exactly.
Yeah. The hatch opens with assistance from Sisko and Kira. The crew enters the Ganges and O'Brien helps a woman to get to her feet. He realizes it is Vash, whom he knew from the USS Enterprise. O'Brien asks how she got on board and Dax replies that they found her in the Gamma Quadrant, where she has been residing for the last 2 years. Sisko advises Bashir to take everyone to the infirmary. O'Brien asks Vash how she got to the Gamma Quadrant by herself, and she replies that a friend brought her there. As everyone leaves for the infirmary, Q turns around and grins. Ta-da!
A friend, yeah. Now, there was no one else there on the way in. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Sisko was standing next to Q as they came out. But no one saw any cause to ask who this random dude was that had his head in a control panel.
Exactly. Exactly what the question I asked myself. Well, I ask myself every time I watch this episode. How, how, you know, yeah. That's...
The only reason he would have been... in that control panel, if he was part of engineering.
Yeah.
So O'Brien would have known who it was, because he would have probably put him there.
Yes, and O'Brien knows Q.
Right. It just doesn't add up.
Nope. But hey, he needed to be there for the show.
Yes, yeah. As we say every time, it's a time-saving plot point.
Yeah. So we're on to Act 1 now. In the infirmary, Bashir scans Vash and finds her to be in perfect health for someone who has been in the Gamma Quadrant for 2 years and has not had touch with civilization for that long. Vash tells Bashir that the Gamma Quadrant is hardly uncivilized, as there are cultures that have been around for millions of years. I mean, it's like around here. There's no reason why the Quadrant would be totally empty, methinks.
I don't know.
In his office, Sisko discusses with Dax how Vash got to the Gamma Quadrant, as she knew nothing about the wormhole and did not use it to get there. Sisko orders Dax to look into it. In the station's assay office, Vash brings in valuable objects she acquired from the Gamma Quadrant for safekeeping, as she's leaving the next day. Those objects looked... Some of them looked really weird, as in props weird. And then there was this last one that looked weird, as in, that's going to be the problem.
Yes, that did seem a bit obvious.
Yeah.
I mean, some of those items looked really significant, and I did wonder whether I recognised at least one of them. And the thing that came to my head straight away was Idek. The Vulcan...
Yeah.
Idek artifacts. But I don't know how that would have worked.
I think the statue was the same one we had in TNG. Oh, which season? I don't remember which season it was, but when they went on Risa, when Vash met Picard on Risa, I think it's the okay. same statue, but the rest I didn't recognize.
Mm.
Sisko walks to the office and begins talking to Vash. They walk out of the AC office into the promenade, and Sisko tells Vash that the Daystorm Institute will be disappointed not to hear from her, as they are anxious to hear what life is like in the Gamma Quadrant. Sisko also discreetly tries to inquire how Vash ended up in the Gamma Quadrant, but she again tells him it is a personal matter, and she does not want to talk about it. One of Vash's old professors, Professor Who, good thing he's not a doctor, this one, wants to speak with her again, which Vash finds ironic, since Who suspended her membership twice. Sisko hopes she'll make an exception in this case. Vash replies that it has been 12 years since she has been on Earth, and she thinks she may go back. Sisko promises to arrange passage for her.
Fair enough.
Yeah, but knowing the character, I found that a bit strange. I mean, she's not someone who settles, but of course you don't know that because you haven't seen every episode of TNG. But
No, you're right. But I did do some research on her because I thought I recognized her from somewhere else. But clearly I didn't. But I know she is... I mean, she would have been in TNG not long before this episode came out. So season 4, season 5 maybe.
Yeah.
I believe.
Probably... I think it might be a little bit earlier than that because she spent 2 years in the Gamma Quadrant. So there's been 2 years between
both episodes. That's a good point.
So probably season 3, 4?
Captain's Holiday was season 3.
There you go.
And I think that was her first appearance in TNG.
Yep.
But the mention of the Daystrom Institute was a bit of a surprise to me because we knew it obviously from TNG, Picard, and it was also mentioned in Discovery. But having looked into it, it appears as though it's been in most, if not all, of the live-action series.
I think so, yeah.
It's been mentioned, yeah.
From the original series and down to Discovery.
Yep.
Well,
I'm learning all the time.
Yeah, technically the latest series is Discovery in the future, but before Discovery's jump, that was Picard.
Yes, it would have been.
While conducting repairs on the Ganges, O'Brien cannot find out why the ship lost power so suddenly. The runabout is now in perfect condition, despite what happened to it earlier. O'Brien replies that once new power reserves are put into the Ganges, it should be fully operational. Thank God it's not fully functional.
I got that too quickly. Well done, sir. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you. I'll be here all week. O'Brien tells Sisko that it is like something drained the ship dry. Yeah, it's like it's lost its, it just lost its energy. You know, when you short circuit a battery or something and then suddenly there's no more energy in there. So I was starting to wonder what happened. It seemed like weird behavior.
Very weird, but the way that the power drops and everything was happening, it doesn't look like a power source issue.
No.
It's some form of interference with the power source.
Yeah, and I just couldn't put the pieces together, you know.
No.
Vash and Q and this, and it didn't really fit. Even though, as I said earlier, the last artifact that she put in the vault seemed a bit strange. I just couldn't see the relation with everything.
Well, obviously, the whole point of this episode is Q.
Yeah.
So clearly, Q is all over this. the fact that he came back with her from the Gamma Quadrant with whatever these artifacts are.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, forget what I just said. The mere fact that he's there points the finger at him.
Yeah.
Because he is the one person that we already know is mischievous, I think is probably the best word, enough to turn this kind of disruption into a game.
Yes. Although we don't know yet what kind of game or what, but is it because it's Q, though? You know, we see Q and we immediately think, oh, he's going to be the one responsible for that, which comes up later on.
Yes.
I mean, it would have been any other character. Maybe we wouldn't have thought that, but...
No, I think it's because Q was there that we clearly know that something is up.
Yeah.
And although we don't know at the moment that there is a game going on,
mm-hmm.
the fact that there is something happening that cannot be explained points to Q.
Yes.
In my mind, at least.
Yes. Yes, in my mind too. Sisko asks O'Brien how well he knows Vash. O'Brien replies that he hardly knows her at all, apart from the one time she was on board the Enterprise. The commander asks what she was doing there, and O'Brien responds that Vash and Captain Jean-Luc Picard were very, very close on the Enterprise, ever since they first met on Risa a few years back. Sisko tells O'Brien that Vash does not seem to be Picard's type, but O'Brien responds that the captain likes a good challenge.
Yes.
Yes, yes. Picard is not Kirk, but he's still the ladies' guy.
He knows what he likes.
Yes.
He knows his own mind.
Yes. Suddenly, the power goes down in the corridor O'Brien and Sisko are standing in. The power returns, and Sisko and O'Brien make their way to Ops. Kira reports that power has drained, and Dax tells the crew that it is exactly what happened to the Ganges.
Mm.
And also those, graviton field?
Yes.
Yes.
The graviton fields.
Yes. Which is... I don't know why they didn't think about the wormhole at this point, because every time the wormhole opens, there's a graviton field forming around that. Plus, the Ganges was, you know, returning from the Gamma Quadrant. And so there was a lot of evidence that pointed to something, either the wormhole itself or something that would have, you know, come back from the wormhole. But apparently they didn't think about that.
Right. But do they have enough evidence, enough exposure to the graviton fields, the behavior of the wormhole as you know, in general, to be able to say, yes, graviton, wormhole, Gamma Quadrant, makes sense?
Maybe not just yet.
Mm.
Well, that brings us to Act 2. O'Brien escorts Vash to her quarters. She asks him how Picard is doing. He tells her that the last time he saw the captain of the Enterprise, he seemed fine. Vash tells him that now she's back on the Alpha Quadrant, she will have to look him up. She enters her quarters and finds Q there, who cannot believe that she's still pining for Picard, whom he still believes to be a self-righteous do-gooder. Q.
Yeah.
I think he likes Picard, in fact.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think anybody could ever doubt that, because Picard is kind of like the ideal opponent to Q. He's everything that Q isn't.
Yeah.
Picard likes order and, well, order. And Q doesn't.
Q is chaos.
Q is chaos, right.
Yes. Vash wants to part ways with Q, but Q does not want to leave her. He suggests they still explore the galaxy, as there is still the Delta Quadrant and many other exotic planets to see. Then, Vash's door opens to Quark, the Ferengi bar owner of the station. Q tells him to go away and makes him disappear. Vash makes Q return Quark, which he does. The bartender tells Vash that he has heard that she has several items from the Gamma Quadrant that may have enormous financial value. Quark believes he may be able to arrange an auction for Vash's item, for a 50-50 split of the profits. Like that's going to happen with Vash.
Yeah, I don't know.
Another chance. Nope. Vash, unsatisfied, goes over to Quark and performs Who Mocks on him. As she does so, he lowers his cut of the profit to 22%. Q reappears, telling Vash that if Quark was the kind of man she was with before, it is no wonder she was attracted to Picard. I found that very funny.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, that scene was educational.
Yes.
And almost, what's the word? Unsuitable.
PG-rated.
not made for kids.
No.
Yeah, that was sorry. Yeah, most definitely.
The doorbell rings and Q disappears again. Vash answers. Dr. Bashir enters and asks Vash out to dinner at Quark's. She accepts, but asks Bashir to wait for her so she can freshen up. How on earth didn't Bashir feel Q right on his shoulder?
Right on his shoulder, absolutely. But I did chuckle with Q mimicking what became.
Yeah.
I found that incredibly funny. But no, there's been a few instances like this, and not just relating to Q. There was an episode a few weeks back when Nog and Jake were in the restaurant, and they were like letting these little ant type things. And I said, we both said at the time, how on earth did they not see the two kids there? And it's exactly the same situation. How can you not notice?
I already said that for some scenes in Next Gen, but maybe it has to do with the fact that at the time they only had 4x3 screens, so they had to be very tight to have everyone on the shot. Maybe they would do that differently now, you know, when they have more space. I don't know. It's just a guess. But
no, I remember you saying that last time, and I recall I agree with you. It's not just the fact that it's 4x3, it's also the fact the resolution was really low. So if you go out too far, you lose a lot of definition and the quality on this is awful anyway, as you know. You lose a lot of detail.
Yeah.
So you're right, you probably do need to be right in people's faces.
While Bashir is waiting for Vash in the replimat, Q, disguised as a Bajoran waiter, tells him not to meet with Vash. Bashir takes offense to this and tells Q that it is none of his business, and he will be seeing her soon. Q tells Bashir that he looks tired and makes him yawn. Bashir, now very tired, leaves and goes to bed. O'Brien sees Q walking away and exclaims, "Bloody hell!"
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, I thought Bashir, he gave up so easily there. Oh, I must be tired. Yeah. I'm going to go to bed.
Yes.
And stand up, Vash. That was just not right.
And I like Alexander Siegel, but his acting skills in first season? No.
But like I said before on a number of occasions, he would be brilliant on the theatre stage.
Oh, sure.
But sure. No.
As you often say, you know, you expect him to burst into a song or something, and
at any moment
he could have left, you know, with a hat on his head and doing some claps. That would fit the character at this point.
I've just had images of him as he was walking away, just doing a little kick. You know, we jump up and click your heels together.
Exactly.
that would have been so Bashir.
Monica says, a good movie with him is Cairo Time. So I don't know this movie. I'm going to...
I do not know this movie.
...look that up. At Ops, O'Brien tells Sisko that Q is on board the station. When Kira asks what Q is, Sisko replies that he is a powerful and extremely unpredictable life form. Dax asks what Q wants with them, and Sisko responds that whatever it is, they can be sure they won't like it. O'Brien suggests Vash might know, and when Sisko asks if Q and Vash would know each other from the Enterprise, O'Brien responds that they met in Sherwood Forest, one of the jokes Q played with the Enterprise crew.
Just a point of interest, Sherwood Forest is about 30 miles from here.
Yeah. It's close. Have you ever seen Robin Hood?
I have never seen Robin Hood, nor have I seen Q or Vash.
Which is good. Then the station's power drains yet again. O'Brien suggests, since there has been nothing wrong with the system for the first time in a month, that Q must be playing a game with them. And I was not sure. It's not, I mean, Q likes to play. He likes to, you know, be a pain in the backside. But I don't think he would ever put the crew in danger, you know, with power outages and that could potentially put the station in a terrible danger. And I didn't think it was in something Q would do.
No, because it's not in his best interests.
No.
If he was to put the crew in danger to the point where he could end up killing them, who would he play with?
Exactly. I mean, if he wants to put the crew in a dangerous situation, he would transport them somewhere safe and save them at the last moment, I think. But, well, it didn't seem like something Q would do, those games.
But it could have been unintended consequences.
Yeah, true.
I mean, I wouldn't put what's happening now past Q at all. I think he's perfectly capable of doing that and very likely to do so. Because at the moment, he's just messing with things. He's not causing any permanent damage. He's not yet done anything that is going to actually affect the people on board the station. However, there is that risk that he may do something that could end up having an unintended consequence somewhere else.
Yeah, agreed.
But if he's capable of doing that, then he's probably very capable of rectifying it if it does happen.
Undoing it. Then he says she likes Q as a villain. He's likable in the wrong way. Yes, agreed.
Right.
He's someone you like to hate.
And I think that's his power as a character.
Yeah.
Because you can watch TV programs where the hero, the protagonist, is not relatable. You can't relate to them. You can't like them. There's nothing endearing about them whatsoever. And it can completely destroy a program. But even when you've got the villain of a particular TV series or villains of a particular TV series, they still have to have likable qualities in order for you to relate to them, mm-hmm. even though they are inherently bad. And I think that, I totally agree. I think that is one of the things that is incredibly endearing to Q, is that he is the kind of bloke I would like to take down the pub.
And punch him in the face.
And, right. Yeah.
And then have another beer.
Precisely. Yeah. No, you totally okay. get it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Monica says she thinks Q sees some human like his pet's toys. Yes.
Yes.
You would play tricks on your pets, but you would never put your pets in danger.
Right. And I this is exactly what it is we're talking about.
And we are joined by Chris from Canada.
Hi, Chris.
Hi, Chris from Canada. So, dear listeners, if you want to join us while we record this episode and chat with the lovely people in our chat room, we will tell you how to do that later on in the episode. Stay tuned. At Quark's, Vash and Quark inspect one of Vash's items, a large crystalline jewel. They discuss what the crystal will be worth at an auction until Sisko enters Quark's, demanding to talk to Vash.
Yeah, quite rudely as well. It wasn't a case of, can I speak to you? It's like, we will talk.
Yeah, we need to talk. Something like that. Now, Sisko was behind them. None of them turned to Sisko. But Quark knew Sisko wanted to talk to Vash. There's no indication he wants to talk to Vash. He could have been addressing Quark.
Is Sisko more likely to have gone up to Quark, grabbed the front of his tunic and said, I want to talk to you? So because he didn't do that, he knew that he wasn't talking to Quark.
Maybe.
I'm spitballing, but I think you're right. It does. There did seem to be an assumption on Quark's part. Unless Quark was just like, can't be talking to me. Because he's a bit belligerent like that.
Yeah. Sisko wants her to tell him about Q. However, Q is already in Quark's and asks Sisko if Starfleet is punishing him or if he actually requested command of Deep Space Nine. I have a feeling Q doesn't like Deep Space Nine too much.
No, I again, he's pushing buttons.
Yeah, yeah. Same as he did with Picard when he met him for the first time.
Precisely. I would love to know, and I'm not sure if I actually want to go down this rabbit hole, but I would love to know what Q actually thinks of the people that he messes with. Does he genuinely like Picard? Because I think he does.
Yeah, I think he does.
Does he genuinely like Sisko? Because that's entirely possible.
Probably not yet.
Does he like Bashir? Well, obviously not. No one does.
Well, Bashir is likable later on.
Okay. I will take your word for that. I will believe it when it happens.
Boo, says Monica. You've been booed. So we're on to Act 3. Commander Sisko orders Q to vacate DS9, but Q intends to bring excitement to the droid Cardassian construct. Q then notices the new uniforms that the station crew wears, accordingly altering his own attire, looking identical to Sisko's uniform. But Sisko isn't impressed by Q's abilities and demands the cessation of power outage afflicting DS9.
I'm not sure who wrote this review, but they're using a lot of big words.
Yeah, yeah. It gets better in Act 4 and 5. Q accepts blame for this if it makes the commander feel better, subtly hinting that he is not responsible. Aha, called it. You don't agree?
Not being responsible and not knowing the reason for it are two different things.
Sure, he knows the reason for it. I'm sure that's why he's there. It's no coincidence that he's there at this moment.
But how easy is it, even though it's not you actually doing something, inaction is the same as negative action. If you know what something is, you know what something is that's causing detriment.
Yes.
Even though it's not you that's doing it, the fact that you're refusing to help or refusing to acknowledge what it is that's doing it, you are still part of the problem.
But that's... I think I recall something from the later seasons of TNG, where the Q continuum forbids Q, well, the Q, from interacting with the humans or any other species. So he probably cannot just tell Sisko that there's something wrong going on. Plus, I'm sure he's very amused by that, watching them trying to make sense of everything. In the course of their conversation, Q causes every person on the space station to disappear, with the exception of himself and the station commander. Yeah, well, that would have been stupid to make everyone disappear. Including him.
Just be there in an empty space station.
Yeah.
Going, what?
In a fit of alarm, Sisko violently grabs hold of Q, demanding the immediate return of everyone. Entertained and seeking to further antagonize Sisko, Q suggests they settle the matter mano a mano. Temporarily transforming Quark's bar into a boxing arena, he begins bouncing about Sisko and landing blows. Humorously, Quark and Vash wager on the sideline. Q keeps insisting that his opponent fight back, and ultimately, an annoyed Sisko knocks him down. With one blow.
Yep.
Well done. Well done, Sisko.
With no marks at all.
No. I like the moustache on Q. It was funny.
Only sort of prancing around with his moustache, quoting the Marquis of Queensbury.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Upon being struck to the ground, a seemingly bewildered Q says, "You hit me. Picard never hit me." And Sisko answers, "I am not Picard." Well done, Captain Obvious. Q is very pleased to find a command-level Starfleet officer who is much easier to provoke than the USS Enterprise captain, and he vanishes in a flash. Yeah, sure, that's not Picard. That's not how Picard would react. But as Sisko rightly said, they are not the same character. They're really not the same kind of commanding officer.
No, different in very different ways.
Yes.
I know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah, I know what you mean too.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I think it's it seems a bit odd that Q would even make that announcement that they're not the same.
Yeah.
It but just doesn't... He that kind surprised. Of comparison doesn't make sense.
I think he was surprised, because as far as we know, the only commanding officer, Starfleet commanding officer Q knows is Picard. So it would be easy for him to, you know, say, okay, they're all the same.
But Q, the Q is apparently an advanced life form.
Yes.
So you'd think they'd be intelligent enough to realize that person A is not the same as person B, even yes. if they are serving the same role. I mean, not least of which, the mannerisms, the voice, dare I say it, the colour of the skin, that they're different that. People.
You would think that, but apparently not.
Mm.
Arriving at Deep Space Nine, numerous aliens who are attending Vash's auction head towards Quark's, which catches the suspicious eyes of Constable Odo. Yet again, station power levels drop and the atmosphere in Ops begins to vent. Fortunately, though, O'Brien is able to activate shielding.
Blind.
Yes.
He reached over his control panel and just tapped immediately on the right part. He couldn't have seen that from where he was stood.
That's...
He just went...
That's how good he is.
I know.
Yeah. Investigating one of the hull breaches that happened, Dax scans with her tracorder and finds that the damage was caused by a focused graviton pulse, concluding that Q is the cause, although Sisko thinks otherwise.
Mm. And I tend to agree with him at this point.
Yes, because that was dangerous and it's not Q's style.
No, not at all.
So what is going on?
Not a clue.
Not a Scooby.
Not a Scooby. Sorry, that sounded really odd coming from you. And I'm sorry. I apologize for saying it, but it's not the Scoobies.
As per Odo's request, Quark arrives at the station security office, where the constable informs the bartender that he is aware concerning the upcoming auction of Gamma Quadrant artifacts. Quark reacts with surprise to this and is a bit angered at being spied on by the local law enforcement. Why?
I should be used to it by now.
Yeah. Surmising that Odo has shapeshifted into an article of furniture, or perhaps the liquor bottle.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if Odo can do that, transform into a bottle. It would be weird, you know, to realize that you got your drinks from someone.
That's a good point, actually. I mean, what has he done so far? He's done a rat. He's done a piece of furniture with a wobbly wheel.
Yeah.
He's done... a
chair,
bag,
a bag,
the bag of money,
a frame, a painting on the wall,
and he regenerates in a bucket. So it's not. I don't think it's unlikely that he could disguise himself as a bottle of wine or something.
Yeah,
yeah. You wouldn't want to spill him, though, would you?
Nope. Odo remarks that the devious Quark cannot keep secrets from him. Quark defends his business venture, but Odo is actually interested in the clientele. In their conversation, Odo mentions that he fails to fathom the logic of materialism and greed. The Ferengi then proceeds to tempt the ever-Spartan Odo with material desire. A suit made of Andorian silk, a ring made of Surax, whatever that is, a latinum-plated regeneration bucket. Odo momentarily considers the bucket, but rejects it. So did he actually consider it, or was it just to try and play with Quark?
I think that's what it was.
Yeah, I think that's what it was too.
It was kind of a...
No.
To answer your question about Surax, the only reference of Surax that we are aware of is the one you just made.
Well, there we go. It must be something precious, otherwise...
That it's making stuff up as they go along.
Yes, as we do. On the promenade, Q walks with Vash and again attempts to persuade her to stay with him, pointing out the safety she's had due to him. Vash tells Q that she does not require him, or his protection in a dangerous universe. Q thus painfully reminds her of a harmful insect bite she received on Phrabus Prime, which he cured, then causing Vash to physically react as if bitten again. First, she experiences irregular balding and her remaining hair becomes lighter in coloration. Then something like hives appear on various areas of her body. Finally, her skin becomes pale and her hair grays as she collapses to the floor from weakness, shaking, and moaning. And I have to say this was painful to watch, but not because she was in pain.
Go on.
Her acting skills were like, you know, kind of Bashir-like at this point.
Yes. Are you sure it wasn't Bashir acting as a body double or something?
Maybe. Mm. We love you, Alexander Siegel, but really, not in first season. No, not in first season. Though if you want to come on the show, we will gladly have you as a guest on the show.
And we will take whatever abuse you choose to throw at us.
Yeah. Yes, we are that low.
If it gets you on the show, we'll take anything.
With Monica, yes. We'll have Monica as a co-guest. Can we have co-guests? I don't know. Is that a thing?
I suppose so. Yeah, if you have a guest, if you have two guests, they're co-guests.
Yeah, I guess. Q departs from Vash and allows her to reconsider their so-called friendship, restoring her to a health. The man helps the woman up and she continues to quark as onlookers gawk.
Yes, the man who helped the woman up clearly didn't get paid because... Nope. They actually said no words. It was kind of a mouthing.
Yeah.
It's a game that Caroline and I play whenever we watch TV programs as to whether an actor actually got paid for their appearance or not.
An extra, yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know if I would call their relation friendship now that he did that to her. I mean, that's not something you do to a friend, if you want them to remember something, I'm not sure you would put them in that situation, you know.
So this is where it kind of puts a question mark on Q's intentions. Because, yes, it does seem as though Q wouldn't necessarily want to cause physical harm to somebody and certainly wouldn't want to kill them. But his psychological weaponry is quite formidable. If he's capable of bringing that kind of memory and suffering back to someone just to prove a point, maybe he's not quite as playful as we originally thought.
Yes, yes, that's true. I agree with you, yes. And with that, we're on to Act 4. In Cisco's station log, he notes that the station's power is continuing to be drained and is being converted into gravitons. If the drain continues, Deep Space Nine's life support system will go offline in less than 14 hours. The station's Kardashian sensors are not sensitive enough to detect where the power outages are coming from, according to O'Brien. Dax suggests that if they flood the station with ionized tritium gas, they could trace the particle flow to the source of the power outages. Technobabble! Not seeing another choice, Sisko orders it done. Then, Q appears on Ops and remarks that Picard and the crew of the Enterprise would have solved this problem ages ago. O'Brien tells Q to go do something constructive like tormenting Cardassians. Q asks if he knows O'Brien. O'Brien tells him he was on the Enterprise, and Q remarks that he must have been one of the little people.
Yeah, ouch. Not a nice thing to say.
He was, technically.
Mm.
He was chief of, you know, chief transport. So I guess he spent.
Well, this is why he's on DS9, because he was one of the little people on Enterprise.
Yeah, absolutely. Q gives Sisko a hint of where the power outages are coming from and tells the crew that Vash is far more dangerous to DS9 than he is himself. And so that made me think that I was right in thinking that he was not the cause of the troubles, but he knew what they were.
But I'm still not convinced that Vash is the cause of the troubles. Forget what we know later on. Even at this point, I don't think it's Vash. Vash has given no hint or indication that she is willingly or knowingly causing any of the issues that the station's experiencing.
True, true. But then I remembered the, you know, the glowing thing in the vault, and I thought that maybe there was something linked with that. But yeah. we didn't get any more clues, so
no. But that still doesn't necessarily mean that Vash is aware that that item could potentially be causing some form of interference. It's not she's doing it on purpose.
No.
Lainey has just posted into the chat, I guess the blooper reel will be longer than the show at this rate. Lainey, have you never listened to this show before?
In Quarks, Kolos, one of the alien bidders, walks up to Quark. He remarks that the Gamma Quadrant merchandise had better be legitimate, or else he will throw Quark out of the nearest airlock. I believe it's not the first time Quark hears that.
Yeah.
Quark assures him that each item has been authenticated by Vash, who is the Federation's expert on the Gamma Quadrant. Well, that's half true. She's the only one who spent 2 years in the Gamma Quadrant from the, you know, large federation and the worlds around it.
Yeah, but I mean, this is what Quark does. He is very free with the truth. Because yes. he actually said that each item comes with a certificate of authenticity,
yes.
which has never been mentioned. Vash smiled and nodded, but she was probably like, okay, I'll have to make one of those then. But then the Federation's expert on the Gamma Quadrant. Yeah, as you say, she may be the expert of the Gamma Quadrant in the Federation, but she's not a representative of the Federation
of the Gamma Quadrant.
Precisely. And that is what Quark does, and he's flipping good at it.
Oh, yeah. Since that is now out of the way, Kolos asks Quark for a synthale. Quark talks more with Vash and proposes a lucrative business venture with her. Vash insists to Quark that she has slept in her last tent, as she is looking forward to living on Earth again. Then the station shakes.
Yeah, I'd be looking forward to living on Earth after that.
Yeah. I'd be out of here in a hurry.
Mm.
At Ops, Kira, at her station, is reading that DS9 is being pulled out of its normal position. Sisko orders that the thrusters be used to stabilize the station, but that does nothing to stop it from moving. O'Brien suggests that the station's reactors be shut down in order to stop the feeding of the station's power to the graviton field. Sisko orders it done. This, however, does nothing to stop the movement of DS9. Well, didn't they have some basic space physics? You push an object in space and you stop pushing, it will keep on moving until you push on the others. On backwards.
Equilibrium.
Yep. Sisko asks Dax to ascertain where the station is headed. The coordinates have Deep Space Nine heading straight for
Bacharam
wormhole.
Well, that was fairly obvious. Everything's been based around graviton fields. It's a magnet.
We have seen graviton all day, and now we're going towards the wormhole. How surprising.
And this is the first time it's been suggested. Sack them all, get a new crew in there that knows what they're doing.
Yes, but, you know, they are far from the Federation, so if they don't report it, nobody will know.
Monica's asking, what's all this about physics and laws? Okay, that's a fair point. Yeah.
And that brings us to Act 5, the final act of this episode. At Quark's, the alien bidders are unaware of the station approaching its impending doom. Quark reminds everyone that payment must be in gold-pressed platinum and that all transactions are final. Vash then holds up a statue of Drolak from the Verathan civilization in the Gamma Quadrant. She proceeds to go into a long discussion about the history of the Verathan civilization, which begins to bore the bidders. Quark tells her that it is not the Daystrom Institute. She does not need to put the statue in its proper historical context. Rather, Quark tells the bidders that it is rare, beautiful, and it is an original Gamma Quadrant piece. And that's enough. You know, It's rare. It's beautiful. Come on, let's bid. Who cares about what it is?
Give me your money.
Hey.
In a civilization that doesn't have money, you know, just saying.
The Federation doesn't use money. Doesn't mean.
Oh no, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah.
Doesn't mean any other. Oh, and sometimes that put them in difficult situations where they have to pay for something and they don't have money, so they have to exchange services or stuff like that. The bidding begins. Meanwhile, O'Brien starts to flood DS9 with tritium gas and Dax begins a sensor sweep. The first part of the station to be cleared is the docking ring. The tritium gas is draining towards the central core of the station, but O'Brien cannot pinpoint its exact location. Kira notes that the station will collide with the wormhole in 18 minutes.
Dun, dun, dun.
Clock's ticking. Tick, tock, tick, tock. During the bidding, Kolos has won the statue of Drolak for 36 bars of gold-pressed latinum. Bidding continues with a dagger. Q, sitting casually behind the bidders, tells them that the station is hurtling toward the Bajoran wormhole and that they will not live long enough to enjoy their purchases. Quark attempts to calm the bidders down by assuring them that everything is under control. I mean, he even offers free drinks. So
that's going to do it.
Yeah. The bidding resumes with Quark's cousin Stoll winning the dagger for 105 bars of gold-pressed latinum. First time I hear of this cousin. I'm not sure we see Stoll again. Do we?
Yes, we do. In season 3.
Yes, I see that.
Have you seen how easy it is now that I just like look things up as we go?
Yeah.
I'm just so spot on at this.
Absolutely.
Get your answer before you even finish asking the question.
Yeah. With the situation getting worse, Dax suggests returning to the station to full power so they will generate enough energy to create a power drain to trace the source of the station's problems.
What? So they want to return the station to full power so they can generate enough energy to create a power drain?
Because they don't have enough data or sensors sensitive enough to pinpoint the location. But if you have a huge power drain, it's probably easier to locate.
So if you want a power drain, stop generating energy.
You have to feed. You know, it's like last weekend, I tried to find holes in the inflatable swimming pool for Zoe sometimes it gets, the weather gets better.
Right. So you pump it up more.
You pump, yeah. But the holes are so small, you can't really know where they are. You have to listen very carefully.
Or stick it in water.
But if you pump more air in the swimming pool, then it will make more noise and it will be easier to pinpoint.
So you're suggesting that they inflate DS9?
Yes, basically.
Fair enough. That'll work.
Inflatable space stations. I mean, it could be the future of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Why not?
Seeing
no other choice, Sisko orders O'Brien to bring the station to full power. Quark brings out the final auction item, the large crystalline jewel. The starting bid is 200 bars of gold-pressed latinum. Soon, the bidding reaches 600 bars. At Ops, the crew is desperately trying to find the source of the station's power drains. Dax finally locates it on the promenade. Surprise.
Wow. Amazing.
Yeah. Kira and Dax leave. Sisko accompanies them and leaves O'Brien in charge. At Quark's, the bidding has reached 2,500 bars, which astonishes Quark. Q then proceeds to bid 2,001 bars. I was like, what? What?
How small are these bars of gold-pressed latinum? Because if they're like bars of gold,
no, they're in
size and weight, you know, 2,501 of those would probably knock DS9 off course.
Yeah, no, they're very small, the bars of gold-pressed latinum. And it's latinum. with gold around it. It's not gold. It's not as heavy as gold.
I was using gold bars as a comparison, but yes.
In size, yes. Sisko, Kira, and Dax reach the promenade and scan with tricorders. Dax locates the item in quarks. Kolos makes a final bid with 3,000 bars. Q then bids 1,000,000 bars on the item. Sisko, Kira, and Dax head over to the item up for sale. Sisko removes his comm badge and places it on the jewel. He orders O'Brien to shut down the reactors and beam the object into space, 500 meters off the docking ring. 500 meters. Why
500 meters? Why wouldn't you just, like, chuck it into the wormhole or something?
Yeah. It's something that's creating trouble and might be very dangerous, but let's put it...
It could be a bomb.
Yeah, but let's put it not too far so we can have, you know, watch it. I don't know.
Just put it just outside the window. That'll be fine.
Yeah. Well, I know the transporter cannot transport, you know, on the other side of the universe or the galaxy or things like that, but still, 500 meters? I mean, come on. The object is beamed away from the docking ring and begins to transform. Sisko, Kira, Dax, and Vash look outside the promenade's window as the creature they have just released heads into the wormhole and back to the Gamma Quadrant.
What?
Yeah, and that's the end of it. We never hear about that again.
What?
Okay.
It would have made more sense had it collapsed or exploded or... you know, dematerialized or something.
Yeah.
Not to turn into a kind of a luminescent stingray or something and just, like, fly away.
Yeah. Huh? And we don't hear about it after that? That's the last time we see and hear about it? I was like, okay, right.
Nah.
Vash is preparing to leave DS9 for Earth. While she sits at the bar and has a drink, Quark entices her with news that a Rokai provincial capital has just been uncovered at Tartarus 5. Vash decides not to go, as she has her mind set on Earth. Q appears again, calling Earth an abysmal place, although he notes that it once had a lot of character, 1,000 years ago, with the Crusades, the Spanish Inquisition, and Watergate.
All negative things.
No one expect the Spanish Inquisition.
Well, to be fair, no one expected Watergate, but, you know.
Yes. Yes, all negative things. I think that was his point, actually. It's just that now it's boring. It's incredibly dull because, you know, it's peace everywhere and everyone agrees with everyone. Q tells Vash she would be much happier exploring Tartarus 5 instead of being on Earth. He then decides to leave her and admits he is going to miss her. Vash grabs Quark's lobe and asks him what is the quickest way to Tartarus 5. Quark leads her away just as Bashir awakes from a long sleep induced by Q. He walks up to Dax in the bar and asks, did I miss something? Well, yeah.
So I think the one overwhelming question off the back of that is, what was the point in having Bashir in this episode at all? Because he just slept all the way through it.
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, you can't have everyone on deck at the same time. No. Because there was Q and Vash, so that was two more characters. So if you put everyone from the crew plus the two main characters of the episode, that's a lot of people. Yeah, Monica says she loves how no one notices his gun during the whole episode. Well, it's a good thing they didn't need medical attention.
Although, unlike engineering, which just has O'Brien, there is other medical staff.
Apparently, yes. Mm. So, yeah, that's the end of the review. What did you think of this episode, Dave?
I thought it was really good. I mean, the fact that Q was in it at all was just, it kind of made the episode for me already. My bar was already set. I would have liked to have seen more of Q being Q. So a bit more of his hijinks.
Yeah.
I think he was a bit toned down in this episode, which I found a little bit disappointing. But yeah, I can't find anything to fault with this episode whatsoever, apart from Bashir. But the whole storyline, there's something wrong with the station. We've got to find the answer to it. Typical, straightforward, you know, well formulated Star Trek plus Q. What's not to like?
Yes. Regarding your observation of, you know, you would have liked to see Q more like Q. You have to remember that it's 5 years into Next Gen, and mm-hmm. so there has been already many episodes with Q in Next Gen.
So granted,
they would have redone the same thing as in Next Gen. So that's probably why they didn't have that kind of episode.
No, okay. So I've got some trivia based on that, which okay. I'll go on to in a bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, I liked this episode because, you know, except for the first time we saw this artifact in the vault room, they don't come back to it very often. So we know there might be something. We don't know what it is. Is it Q? Is it not Q? Is it Vash? Is it the artifact? So up until the end, we have no idea we really don't have a clear idea of what's going on. I'm a little bit disappointed by the end. As we said, when this thing just transforms into creatures and flies away into the night. but the fact that we don't hear anything about that later on, no explanation, no nothing. But yeah, it's one of those good episodes. As you said, it's a good Star Trek episode with Q. So what's not to like?
Precisely. Yeah. So yeah, winner as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. We'll just have to ignore some acting skills that are not up to par, but
again, Star Trek.
Yeah. Yeah. And first season too. So
yeah.
It's gonna get better. It's gonna get better.
Well, like I said before, when we've mentioned this, I mean obviously with TNG we highlighted the acting skills quite early on, and they did improve, and we've highlighted it at the beginning of DS9, and so far things seem to be good, and you've given me assurances that Bashir stops being Bashir at some point in the not too distant future as well. So looking forward to it.
Cool. So do you have a bit of trivia for us?
I do. Yeah, so this is the only episode in the entire DS9 series in which John Delancey appears. But also they've picked out in the trivia section that it's the, I don't know whether it's the only time he doesn't do it, but it's observing that he doesn't click his fingers to summon his powers.
True. That's
but
true.
I can't vouch for that because I haven't seen that much of Q.
I don't know if it's the only time, but he didn't do that in this episode.
Yeah. Now, despite the fact that this is the only time he appears in DS9, it's one of three appearances of John Delancey in Star Trek during DS9.
Yeah.
So he was in the TNG episode True Q, which I think was only a couple of weeks before. And he appears in the TNG episode Tapestry, which was the week after this one aired for DS9.
Okay.
So you're getting three sets of Q in a very close proximity to each other, but across both series.
Now I'm gonna have to rewatch the TNG and DS9 at the same time.
Yeah, these are both season 6 episodes.
All right.
The pre-ganglionic fiber and post-ganglionic nerve thing.
Mm-hmm.
We should have heard about that before. It was supposed to be a storyline mentioned in Emissary, but they cut the scene out.
Ah.
So that's why it seemed quite random to us.
Okay.
But had they included the scene within Emissary, it would have probably made more sense.
Okay.
O'Brien recognized both Vash and Q, and yet he didn't share any screen time with either character in TNG.
He probably met them off screen, if I can say so. The characters yes. might have encountered, you know.
Possibly, yeah. Well, encounter at Farpoint, they both appeared in, but never at the same time. But this might explain why Q didn't know who O'Brien mm-hmm. was, and why he then referred to him as one of the little people, because O'Brien would probably know of Q by reputation.
Mm-hmm. Or by reading reports.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But Q not recognizing O'Brien, well, yeah, we've explained that one already.
Yeah.
And the last piece of trivia, there are six characters in this episode that also appeared in TNG.
Oh.
So O'Brien, uh-huh. Bashir, Quark, Q, Vash, and Morn.
Oh, true. During the crossover, well, not crossover, but when the Enterprise docked at DS9. Cool.
So, yeah.
Cool, cool.
So that's it. That's it for the trivia. I thought some nice, interesting stuff in there.
Absolutely. So I guess, unless you have something else to add.
No, I think I've said enough.
All right. That brings us to the end of this review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 7, Q-less. So, thanks to all of you for listening to our show. You can help us spread the love for this podcast by asking an omnipotent friend to distribute samples of our show to as many civilizations as possible across space and time. Or if you think that might violate the Prime Directive, the Temporal Accords, and a bunch of other laws of physics, you can simply share the address of our website on the social media.
And you can find our website at tlgreyhot.org, where you'll find the show notes, our reviews, and you can also leave a comment on each episode.
If you are still using that subspace way of communication, you can send us an email at feedback@tlgreyhot.org.
We're also on Twitter and Facebook. Our username on both of those is TEGHpodcast. And we're also on Telegram at t.me/TEGHpodcast, which at the time of recording is the only place you'll get the link to our unlisted, experimental, highly graphically enhanced and augmented live stream. Are we going to make it public then?
When we publish the episode?
Yes. So we are going to start making the live stream public, so check out the website for the link. And also at t.me/TEGHpodcast, where we'll post the link for the live stream, even though it's going to be a public one at the time of recording.
Thanks to Memory Alpha. As always, we have based a review on this week's episode on their work, and this is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution non-commercial license.
And the rest of this show is released under a Creative Commons by Attribution share-alike license. See our website for more details.
This podcast is part of the Other Side Podcast Network. Check out our website at otherside.network for our phenomenal collection of shows and hosts. And we are trying to get old hosts bring a new weather forecast show. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be very exciting.
If it happens, it'll be a miracle. Our next episode will be our review of Star Trek Deep Space Nine Season 1, Episode 8, Dax. And we will be joined by a very prolific returning guest.
Absolutely. Someone we cannot ask the 7 questions because he's been with us many, many times.
We need more questions. That's what it is. We need to add to the 7 so we can ask him new ones.
Once again, thank you, Lainey. Thank you, Monica. Thank you, Eric. Thank you, Mark and Chris, for joining us for this live recording of our show. We appreciate the animation in our YouTube chat. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it's been really good.
Yes. That brings us to the end of this week's episode. Thank you, Dave, for joining me once again and being part of this experimental live stream.
It's been fun. It's really weird to watch, because when we do our video conference, we were previously broadcasting what we were seeing. What we're now seeing is a lot more bare bones to what the people on the live stream are seeing. And it's just really odd to see that difference.
Yes.
At least my laptop's not trying to take off under the strain of trying to make things look good.
We have discovered that it takes less resources to do the green screen, well, the chroma key, in OBS before we send that to YouTube, rather than having StreamYard, do the green screen, and then send that to YouTube as is. So what I'm looking at now is a pink Dave on a green screen, but I do see the green screen.
But the downside to that is obviously that your hardware and broadband are under a lot more strain.
Yes, indeed. But
so it seems to we'll work it out.
Yeah. Mm. Well, that's it for this week. We will be back next fortnight with a whole lot more Star Trek. In the meantime, take care of yourselves. Ciao, ciao.
See ya.
Inside the Ganges are Lieutenant Jadzia Dask. Dask? Mm-hmm. Of course, yeah, Dask. It's a new character. Dask.
It's like a tribble, but not quite.
Ooh, it's a nice tribble.
It's a multicolored tribble.
Ooh. Is it worse?
Oh, hang on.
Ooh, what?
And his little brother. hang on a second. Let me. Hang on.
Oh. Bashir takes offense, and this the best job. I'll catch you.
Bless you. What was that sound effect?
Oh my. He walks up to Dask. One day I will manage to say her name properly from the first time.
Well, you better do next week, because that's the name of the episode, isn't
it? Yeah, but you're reviewing.
Oh.
You've been listening to a member of the Otherside Podcast Network. Find more about our shows at otherside.network.